going to speak about the crop well relatives of sunflowers, a genetic resource for resistance to sunflower broom rape. Sunflower broom rape is a parasitic weed that has been plaguing sunflowers for over 100 years. And sunflowers is one of our native crops in U.S. Domesticated 3,000 to 4,000 years ago in the area of Tennessee and Arkansas. So just to outline what I'm going to talk about, I'm going to talk about a little bit about the broom rape history, and then I'll talk a little bit about the genetic diversity of the wild species that we, crop wild relatives that we have available to find sources of resistance. We'll talk about the broom rape resistances, and then talk a little bit about sort of summary future perspectives. So if we look at broom rape, it's a very large family of composed of over 2,000 species distributed in 90 heterotrophic genera. 20 species are considered important parasitic weeds. First reported in the 1890s in the parts of Russia. The distribution of this parasitic weed is in Russia and Ukraine, Romania, basically the Balkan areas, Turkey, Spain, Serbia, Hungary, but not in the Americas. And it's something we don't want, we don't need, and hopefully we never get. But and also in Australia, it's not present, which is kind of interesting because we've been exchanging seeds with Europe for, you know, 75, 80 years. So just go into a little bit about broom rape, what is called Orbonki kumana or cernua. And broom rape has traditionally been controlled up until in the 1980s by five genes, OR1 through OR5, and the races are A through E. And the situation we have with this is these races change very rapidly. So once resistance is found, then it overcomes the pathogen overcomes that. Race F then appeared in Spain in the 80s, in the 90s, with OR6, OR7, and now races G and H are appearing in Spain and Turkey. Race identification is kind of complicated because prior to recently, was thought to be only self-pollinated, but it occasionally outcrosses. So you have the genetic recombination, which creates a mixture of races. So in screening this, it sometimes gets to be problematic. So if we just look at the basic life cycle of this parasitic weed, you have a seed germination, you have an aerial phase, and then you have a subterranean phase. You have the seed germination, and then you have a germination and attachment to the root. Then you have a tubercle, and that comes up and then becomes a plant, sets seed, and goes back into the cycle. Just to give you a perspective on these seed, this is a photo micrograph, electron micrograph. The seeds are 39.32 times 10 to the minus 6 inches long. 1,000 seed weighs about 0.0029 grams. So it's very small, and which is kind of interesting about how it's spread or not spread. It's very fine in seed, and it could be mixed in very easily, but at this present time, we don't have it in the Americas. So to speak about the sources of resistance that we have for this particular parasitic weed on a global basis, since we don't have it in the U.S., is our sunflower gene bank, which is located at Ames, Iowa, and Laura Merrick is the curator of this collection. And if we look at the sunflower crop well relatives, this is what we have available for us. Approximately, 53 species. We have 14 annuals, 39 perennials. We have diploids, tetraploids, hexaploids. So we have the whole gamut of ploidy levels, which complicates the integration of these species for cultivation. All species have been hybridized through integration, except for one annual species. The ability to do this integration is using embryo rescue, because embryo abortion is a very key issue, and also F1 sterility using colchicine to double chromosomes to regain fertility. So here's what we have in the gene bank. We have a total of about 5,000, 2,500 cultivated, and wild species we have about 2,519, 1,641 are annuals and 878 are perennials. And as you see, there's a discrepancy between with the perennials we have the most species of, but we have the fewer collections, and that's because the perennials don't set as much seed, and this is a ex situ conservation type of a system. So broom rape resistance, the species have continued to be a substantial reservoir of genes conferring resistance to broom rape races. This is cited in many publications about the value of the crop wall relatives. So if we just take a quick look at wild Helianthus pest resistance, this is some of the major diseases of sunflowers. This is the number of annual species that have been identified to have some types of resistance, annuals, perennials, but this is where we want to concentrate down here. This is what we're talking about, broom rape. So there's been 8 species of annual and 29 species of perennials, which is very interesting because broom rape is not here, but yet we have this germplasm that has all this resistance, and I still haven't figured out why that is, because generally you think about the pathogen or the parasite, challenging the disease and it's developing resistance. So if we look at what we know so far, what we've accomplished as a sunflower community is that 29 species of the perennials, and we're talking about races E through F, which are the beyond the original 5 OR1 to OR5, 8 annual species. What's interesting is that these perennials here appear to be immune, because there is no, when you look at a wild population, it's an open pollinated segregating population. So if you have almost immunity in the population, that means your gene frequency is either high or that your methodology of screening is flawed in some way. Now, in one of the populations, we did have a segregation of 33% of the perennials. And this is just a picture of what the stalk that produces the seed that comes up by the attaches to the root. So this is a summary of by species and by race. And these are the annual species, which originally the perennials seem to be the go-to relatives or species to look at, but the annuals also have resistance to either single races or multiple races. And particularly, if you have something with A through G, you're stacking your genes here without having to stack them singly. And this is probably of more value in terms of durable resistance. So if we just take a little backtrack to the original A through E, OR1 through OR5, the Helianthus annuus, anomalous is an annual, Deserticula is an annual, and these are interspecific combinations, so they've been backcrossed twice in the F3 generation. And these are the original material from the former Soviet Union, the Progress and Novinka, where the cultivars were used up into the 80s. But tuberosus, which is a hexaploid, has been used. They started working on this in the 1920s and developing a lot of tuberosus. So a lot of the current, the newer cultivars have a tuberosus background, and those are perennial. And so this is up to about 1980, OR1 through OR5 was protecting the crop in the, you know, major production areas of the rest of the world. So just to give you an idea of what these look like, this is Helianthus nomus, grows in a very desert area, 250 millimeters precipitation. This is Helianthus deserticula, again in a similar area, but a little bottom of the desert floor, is a little more heavy soil, but still very limited precipitation. This is the Helianthus tuberosus, or Jerusalem artichoke is the other name for this, hexaploid. This grows in very wet areas. So, you know, we usually think about, okay, we think about a parasite or a disease, we look at a habitat where they occur, and if the species occurs there and survives there without being infected, then the concept or the idea is that they, you know, have genetic resistance and not avoidance. But in this particular parasitic weed, this is a very heavy soil, very wet soil. Race F, that's a newer race, and these are again the source of the germplasm. We have a PI, so these are interspecific, but there's Grosus race, Maximiliana divaricatus, and 2 divaricatus, and these are BR1. These are released germplasms that were developed in the 90s and 2000s. This is a picture of Grosus race. Again, it grows in very wet areas, so, you know, habitat may not be as important as we think. Maximiliana is another diploid perennial. The Grosus radius is also a diploid perennial, so crossing them is somewhat easier. It's not easy. So the most recent race that has been confirmed is race G, and that is in 2014, and this is an annual species, Helianthus debulus tardiflorus, and this is a source population for this race G. And I should mention that all the testing has been done not in the U.S., not in the greenhouse. It was all done in Turkey and Spain have been our major partners, but also Serbia and Romania, Bulgaria, and the former Soviet Union has also tested. You know, we send them the material, they test them, they send us the results. So this is the newest race in annuals, and there has been the Spanish Spanish federal government has developed a germplasm, an interspecific germplasm that is being deployed in Europe. So, just in summary here, summarize what we've done. We have genetic resources available, but it's not easy working with these wild crop wild relatives, and it's a job that's it's a long-term, high-risk type research, but it can be done, but it takes a lot of patience, and a lot of the breeding companies are, you know, not equipped to do that. They're more on the, you know, we provide the basic germplasm, they develop the hybrid lines. But there are opportunities to move exotic genes from with more precision and efficiency as the newer technologies come online and become more efficient at this. This way we're just back-crossing out the traits we don't want. Additional molecular tools are becoming more available to mine these genetic diversities, and that may facilitate us or help us in the screening. The last thing is that we need a good breeding strategy and a global cooperation, and Rex Bernardo had a real nice diagram yesterday. He had a triangle, and at the top he had good germplasm, on the right he had good breeders, and on the other side he had good technology. And I think that's the key. It has to be a global undertaking, and you know, we have the germplasm, and you know, we'll participate in this process. So with that, I'd like to thank you, and any questions?
It's not a question, but come on. is that the number of wild extensions are as much as the cultivated. So that's really a good sign, because most other crops is about 5 to 10% at the max.
I've been collecting almost 40 years now, gene bank collecting, so I think we have a good representative cross section. We don't have a total one, but we probably never will. And again, these are open pollinated segregating populations, so every time you look at a population, you know, your frequency or your possibility of finding something always you know, one population may not, and then so one looking at one population is not enough. You have to look at a few populations.
This is a kind of a wider question I've always been interested in.
Could you just speak up?
Sure. When you list the species and you said it was resistant, do you find that across lots of populations? Do you mean it's been found once in one population? Or what does it mean sort of at the specific level in terms of resistance?
So you're asking about how many populations we look at?
Yeah, or in general, I mean, do you feel confident that, for instance, most of Maximiliani is resistant in general, or does it take a lot of work to find the population within Maximiliani?
Well, you know, I can't remember how many populations of Maximiliani we have, but, you know, probably several, and
70 or
60
or
70
max.
Yeah. Generally, when the screening is done, is people try to look at a cross section of what's available, and then take that as a, because we have final variations in these populations. I guess to me the bigger discussion here is why don't we have it? Is the climate too cold here or whatever? Because we've been exchanging germplasm for years. And, we saw the size of the seed, so I don't know. If anybody ever has a good idea, let me know.